this son of a bitch all night. He chick. He tripped me.
Well, are you feeling satisfied now, Teddy? Because I can go on busting you up all night.
Нет. He beat me. Straight up. Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Tuesday, October 17, 2018. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. Clip at the top of the show, I'm sure many of you recognize from the movie Rounders. I think whether or not you play poker, I think every gambler appreciates that movie. A lot of poker players will credit it with inspiring them to want to play poker, or at least play better poker. I think that it's one of Edward Norton's best performances, probably one of Matt Damon's best performances, and of course, John Malkovich is fantastic as well. That, of course, was his little bit there at the end after he got beat by Matt Damon's character. Such a good movie. I'm probably going to watch that in its entirety soon after I pulled up that clip. Got inspired to watch it again. I went to National Harbor to pick up some free play. They're giving me $10 of free play each week, and it's just close enough that going over there for the $10 is worth it. I went over there and played and decided, you know, I haven't played some video poker in a while. I wanted to scratch that itch, decided to play, and man, did that suck. Oh, man, I couldn't hit a flush draw to save my life. And here's what, it was one of these sessions, right? It was one of these sessions where I get a full house on, like, hand three, right? And, like, I'm not satisfied, right? I haven't scratched this itch. And, like, when you hit those, like, those nice hands early, you think, oh, okay, I got some money to play with. And then it was just, I got nothing significant after that. At one point, it did seem like I was going to two pair and three of a kind my way back. It was, like, every other hand was one of those. And it looked like I was going to, like, just slowly crawl back. And then did not happen. But to be fair, it was a very small buy-in. I wasn't looking to do much play, but it did not end well. Football kind of crushed me this weekend. I was doing well for the week going into the weekend, and then I had a handful of bets just not go my way in some unlucky fashions over the weekend, and made it an unfortunate weekend in sports gambling. I had Calvin Ridley over 4 receptions. Thought it was good enough that he was going to, I thought he was going to get that in the first half. Then he has to go and hurt his ankle. He's out with 3 receptions. So couldn't get the 4th one to make it a push. That didn't go so well. And then in the Patriots game, Patriots and Chiefs, the Chiefs defense, one of the worst in the league on covering running or stopping running back passes, right? So according to Football Outsiders and some of their proprietary stats, the Chiefs give up plenty of yards and scoring to running backs in receiving scenarios. And so what do? I find a player prop bet on James White, who is a receiving machine for the Patriots. It's his role. Over 5.5. I thought I was gonna get that before halftime. I thought that was gonna be 5 receptions in the first half. Nope. Bill Belichick must be monitoring my prop bets and changing his game plan out of spite for me, right? Because that's how that works. And James White got exactly 5 receptions. And it wasn't even that he was dropping passes or that. I think there might have been like 1 or 2 passes that sort of that went his way that he wasn't able to hold on to. But in general, just the game plan itself did not lend itself well to that bet. So that was another one that didn't go my way. And then just I came close to splitting, I guess, the rest of them. But where it turned into a foul weekend or that it really went bad is that James White prop, the 5.5, got heavily juiced on the over. And I normally don't play heavily. I think it was -160, right? So so for every $1.60, I'm betting every $1.60 I'm betting would win $1, right? So it's pretty heavy juice. And this is what happens with player props. Because on player props, you could really get into some like interesting middling situations if they were to actually move the line itself, because those lines are pretty tight and there's had that moved up to 6 or even 6.5 on how many people are betting the over. Well, heck, you take the over on 5.5, take the under on 6.5, and you know he gets 6, and that's gonna be a nice day. So they usually just move the juice. And I don't like laying that kind of juice, but man, 5.5 was a really low number considering how the Patriots usually play and the Chiefs' weakness on defense to that particular scenario. So, that loss did not do well for me. But the week has already started, and I've gotten some plays in baseball, some basketball, some soccer, just a little bit here and there. I'm making a nice slow crawling back slowly. Trying to quote unquote get back to even, right? And that's all we're ever trying to do. Usually on Monday mornings, I record quick audio for my Patreon subscribers of some lines that I like right away going into the NFL week, and which NFL games I will not be using for my Survivor pick. And then if I think there's any teasable games, I mentioned those as well. I didn't do one this week because on Monday, I actually had a job interview. And so I was very focused on that. And by the time I'd gotten home, I didn't feel like doing it. Then yesterday got away from me. And so I figured instead of forcing it there, I was just going to say it here. And it kind of works out because I kind of want to touch on a learning opportunity in betting NFL and really thinking about what you're betting. Usually I will, when on Monday mornings, I will look at lines and I let sort of my gut response lead me into a line I might like. That has worked out so far. I liked the Vikings a couple weeks ago. That worked out. Like Philadelphia last week. That worked out really well. Came into this one, the two lines that jumped off the page, but I liked right away were the Browns catching 3 points going into Tampa Bay and the Redskins only laying 1.5 at home against the Cowboys. So I've already bet these, and the reason why that's a mistake is, even though I do like the Browns, but knowing the results of last week, it probably will end up getting to 3.5 at some point after the public gets more opportunity on this, because the Buccaneers looked like they could really score easily against the Falcons, which, you know, fine, the Falcons defense isn't great, and the Browns sort of got tore up by the Chargers, right? So recency bias is going to tell people the Buccaneers are maybe the better side here. And I probably could have waited to get 3.5. And so I still like the Browns. I'm not backpedaling on that. But if I put a little bit more thought into it, I probably could have waited around for a better line. So I may put a little bit more on it if it gets to 3.5. I'll probably just leave it alone. And then the Redskins, kind of the same deal. The Redskins sort of look like they squeak by the Panthers. The Cowboys tore up the Jaguars at home. I'm wondering if I wait a little bit if this will start moving closer to a pick 'em, but I don't know if that really matters so much. So anyways, I've already bet the Redskins and I've already bet the Browns. Those are the two that I liked right off the bat. The Titans, I don't think, are very good. And so the Chargers laying 7 right now, that's a very teasable line. And then if the Patriots and Bears game gets to 4, I would tease the Bears to bring it up to 10. That's the teaser that I'm probably looking at this week is I'll probably be teasing the Chargers down from 7. And then if assuming that the Bears get to 4, it's been between 3, 3.5. But I think, I don't know, if it gets to 4, I'm definitely teasing the Bears and I'm teasing them with the Chargers. Two games I'm definitely not touching in Survivor this week, Survivor Pool this week, is I'm definitely not touching the Giants-Falcons game. The Falcons are probably going to win, but the Falcons defense is a sieve, right? So it's a sieve of a defense. So I don't think I can rely on them to not accidentally give up scores, even to Eli Manning. So I'm not touching that one. And then Broncos Cardinals is another one I'm not touching at all. So those are two games that I would just I'm not even considering as an option in NFL Survivor. The current Survivor pool that we have going on, the one, the Chasing Losses one that we put together after we all got booted by week three. This one's a little bit more interesting. We had 10 starting in week four through week six. We've only lost two players, so we still have 8 out of our original 10 that are moving forward. And some people have used some you know, Patriots, Rams, Packers, it's the Chargers. You know, people are using some heavy hitters right away. So hopefully this lasts well into the season, and we can see some creativity on what people are using in their Survivor picks. And the last thing I want to say about sports balling, I know Tony Snyder and the rest of you that don't really sports ball are circling your hands a little bit. You're like, come on, let's pick it up. Let's get a little bit out of the sports ball. Last thing I want to say in the sports balling and the sports world, man, the women's national team soccer looks phenomenal. Their World Cup is this coming summer. And let me tell you, if they are priced at anything over 1-to-1 to win the World Cup, it's a bet. Auto bet for me. If I'm getting even money or better on them to win the World Cup next year, I'm taking it. I'll probably also bet at least one other team, but the women's national team looks so good, and that team is so talented that anything at even money or better, probably an auto bet for me. Super excited about that. The United States is going to kick a lot of tail, I believe. It's gonna be. There's a lot of talents in the women's game right now worldwide. But man, the U.S. team looks phenomenal. Basketball started. Man, there's like a lot of, sorry, sports ball people. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for betting right now. I have the Dodgers winning the pennant, the National League pennant, and I also took the Brewers in the series at a better price. And so I'm just sort of sitting back waiting for that to happen. If the Brewers win, it's gonna be a nice payday for me. If they lose, it's a small loss because I bet a little bit more on the Brewers. But that's going on. NBA started, football still going, college, man, it's a great time of year to be a sports bettor. But can't forget those that aren't into sports betting. Can't leave behind the video poker players, the regular poker players, the table game players. And on today's show, Chris McGowan, a.k.a. Gambling Magoo, listener, podcast listener, member of our community. He's attended VIMP. He's attended Vegas Vacations. He attends these community events. I met him at Vegas Vacation 7 over Labor Day weekend. I invited him onto the show, even though I did not remember right away, because it's Vegas, and of course, you know, who remembers everything they do in Vegas? But he kindly reminded me, and I was all about it. I think I wanted his perspective. I wanted to hear what it was like about his life as a gambler. So we got him on, and we talked. It's a really chill conversation. I think you're gonna enjoy it. There we go. I think. You know what's funny is I just hit record and I realized I didn't really confirm your it's McGowan, right?
Yes, right.
Okay, Chris McGowan, known on Twitter as Gambling Magoo, Chris McGowan, member of the community. You and I finally got an opportunity to meet at Vegas Vacation 7, sir. Thank you so much for joining me on The Better Life.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great. I really appreciate it.
So, you know, Eric Rosenthal made the joke that, you know, some people, when they go to Vegas, they have to wonder, they wake up the next morning wondering who they slept with or what they did the prior night, where they've been. I have to wonder, who did I invite on the podcast? I get a little invitey when I'm drunk, but as I promised you and as I promised anybody else, all of those invites were sincere. I just may or may not have remembered making them. So I'm glad you...
If you went to the party, I'm there with my dance shoes on.
So I'm glad that you followed up on the offer, because I know that you have some interesting perspectives and stories on gambling. You're a Vegas fanatic like many of us. But yeah, Let's start where we start all of these interviews, Chris, and that is your first exposure to gambling. Maybe not even when you first laid your first bet or maybe your first gamble, but the first time you saw it. Do you remember that time?
I do, yeah. I think I remember my grandfather would take me to the horse track. Like, I grew up in a really small town, and I remember getting that race program. You know, it has sure. all the lines and all the bets and all that sort of stuff. And I remember, you know, poring over these statistics of these horses. I don't know how old I was, maybe 8 or 9 at the time. And I would do farm work for him, and we'd go to the track, and I'd ask him to place bets on these horses for me. And I even remember, I swear I remember going up to the window myself and placing these bets. Like, huh. with me, but rural town, you know, I remember that. And I remember we had these like county fairs, and in the midway, they would have crown and anchor wheels. And I remember dragging my grandma over there, same age, and getting her to place bets for me. And they were like quarter minimums or something like that. But you had to be 18 to play. And she'd place these bets for me, and she did not want to.
She yeah. did not want to.
No, that's... she absolutely did not want to, but I got her to do
it. But she obliged.
She did, yep. Anything for my son, right?
Yeah, right. I don't think any of my I'm sure my wife would probably place a wager for me if I really asked her to, and it wasn't a lot of money. But other than that, I'm not sure if anybody in my immediate family would make a bet for me. Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, that's part of living the better life, right? Sometimes you're the lone gambler in a family. And you know, I kind of like it, though. I'm curious. Anybody else in your family? I mean, it sounds like your grandfather got down a little bit, but anybody else in your immediate family when you're growing up or even now that takes part of betting?
Yeah. You know, that same racetrack eventually built. So in Ontario, Canada, they allowed all the racetracks to build a slot facility. So that same racetrack built a 100 slot machine facility when video slot machines were getting really much more popular. And I remember my mom loved it. Like, my mom loved slot machines. So I think I was probably 19 at the time, and we would go there quite often and play some slots. And it was just a really good bonding experience for us. She doesn't play anymore, but I do.
I mean, what about, does your wife gamble at all?
She doesn't really. She does just play a little bit when we go to Vegas. Actually, it's funny because her favorite game by far is Pai Gow, which is such an odd game for a non-gambler to enjoy. That's her favorite game.
You know, it's funny you say that. So my wife doesn't gamble either. But we were recently at Baltimore Horseshoe. And I had some direct bet to play, right? So it was all just little betting coupons. And so I took her with me to come around and watch me play some of these games, because there wasn't any anxiety in losing, because it was just a free bet. Mm-hmm. And I think I could see her interest in Pai Gow. I'm not sure if she would ever actually be interested to play, but I could definitely see her understand why that would be a fun game to play. You're right, it is an odd game, because I think we think as Pai Gow is sort of like two or three levels, you know, up or down, however you want to say, however you want, like, direction you want to put it. It seems like a couple iterations away from entry level gambling.
That's right.
For that to be their game, that is interesting. But I will say that I have, you know, my wife is evidence that that even non gamblers find it, like, can see the value, the interest in it, anyways.
Yeah. So on our last trip, I've forced my wife to play video poker at video poker bars with me and drink and things like that. And she does it because I enjoy it, and she likes the free drinks and stuff. But our last trip, in which I met you, she finally, I think, got it. Or she's like, now I can see why you do this. It's fun. It's interactive. You see the whole casino typically. And it's just a really good time. We had a great time playing video poker at O'Shea's, believe it or not. Music was good, you know, just a good vibe in there, and we just had a great time. So she finally got the video poker bar thing.
Yeah, my wife, when she came to Vegas with me, her first time to Vegas, Every casino we went to, I went up to a video poker machine to see what the pay tables were. And after about two or three of them, she picked up on what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And like, she would announce them as I pulled them up, right? I'd pull it up and she'd be like 7-5 and I'm like, yep, not playing that. Yeah. So
it's so cool when they get into it, and they sort of share your same interests. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. It's interesting that she enjoys video poker because of the people watching aspect of it. I'm curious your thoughts on this. Video poker is so different for me because I'm actually playing. You know, it's like I do very little. Like if I'm playing with people next to me, I'll be social with them, but I very rarely am paying attention to much outside of the people that I'm with in the game that I'm playing and the beer that I'm drinking, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like to play video poker, and I find that when I get a couple beers deep, I just get into the zone where I am staring at this screen and I'm punching these buttons as fast as I possibly can. And I've always been envious of people who can sit there, sip their beer, play a couple hands a minute. That is just not possible for me. I'm all about the button crunching.
Yeah,
fast as I can possibly go.
Right? Exactly. Yep. Exactly. The only video poker my wife played was when we sat down at a bar, and the bartender quickly let us know, like, hey, I need the green light needs to go off for me to give you a drink. And so I put $5 in her machine, put $5 in mine, told her, because he said the bartender told us $5 coin in and the green light will go off. So I was telling her what to hold, and then I was going back to my game and telling her what to hold. And then we did the $5 coin through, neither of us hit anything. And then, we got a drink and she saw why one would do that. Right.
There's quite often times where she's still on her first $20 and I'm feeding my third $100 and she's like, what's going on over there? Are you winning?
Oh man. That's funny.
Oh, honey, I'm about even. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm about even. Exactly. Always about even, right? You're either up or you're about even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those only two. You had these experiences when you were younger. Then as you're growing into becoming a young adult, how do you start developing as a gambler?
Yeah. So basically, I started playing slots with my mom, and I sort of quickly tired of that because those things are just money in, nothing out over a course of time. And so there's another small casino not too far from here in Sarnia, Ontario, about an hour. And I started playing blackjack there. And I played a lot of blackjack for probably a year. And I always, at the same time, I started to learn all of the other casino games, actually, thanks to the Wizard of Odds. I studied that stuff. So I got pretty proficient in all the casino games, and except for roulette, because it's boring. And I could always see that... In the corner of the casino, there was this dark, smoky poker pit, and it would let you smoke back there. So it was just this cloud of smoke and these old guys playing back there. And I got really curious, so I started doing a bit of research on what they were playing. And this was actually, I think this was probably 2 years before Moneymaker won the World Series, and things just got crazy, right? So what they were playing back there was 5-10 limit poker. So eventually I bought into that game one night, and I'd done some study and bought in. And funny enough, on my very first time playing limit holder, I think I turned quads on one of my hands. And very first time playing mid quads. And I remember on the river, I just called. And my opponent, he just stared at me for the longest amount of time after the hand was done, staring at me, trying to figure out who I was or what I was doing, whether I had no idea what I was doing or I was playing at a level far beyond them. But it's just a ridiculous thing to make quads in your first time playing poker. But they would also, so eventually I played that for quite some time. I moved up to 10-20 limit games and even 20-40 at another casino when they spread it. Actually, there was a casino in Brantford, Ontario that would occasionally spread 5,100 limit. So if I had the bankroll, which I never had enough bankroll for that game, I would play that one. And their chip stacks would just tower over mine. I mean, typically I was the only white guy at the table. but like they would have tens of thousands of dollars and I'd be sitting there with a couple grand. So I'll give you a bit of background. So that time, loan limit poker was starting to be more popular, but we were playing at government-owned charity casinos, which their bylaws or whatever state that there can only be a maximum bet of $100. So all of the roulette tables, all the blackjack, all the craps are all max 100. And that includes poker. So they couldn't figure out a way to do no limit because people wanted to bet more than 100. Right. They eventually did many years later when they basically made it a 1 to 100 spread limit game. So you could bet $100 at a time, anywhere between $1 and $100, which effectively made it no limit, sort of.
Right.
So, so at the same time, I was playing these limit games, but I was also traveling around playing no limit at Windsor Casino or at Niagara Casino, and just doing that, and it was a lot of fun. Poker was massively building in popularity. It was the perfect timing. I got in and kind of learned my chops a few years before the big boom hit, and eventually I started going to University of Windsor full time, and I just decided to play poker, you know, to get myself through college because there was a casino right down the street, because sure. Caesars Windsor. And really, I mean, any other job that you're going to get at that time is going to pay you maybe a buck more than minimum wage. So I figured as long as I could make $8 or $9 an hour, you know, I could do what I love and make money doing it. It's better than being a sandwich artist.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. So then, I mean, like, what's your gambling look like now? Like, what do you, like, you were just in Vegas. You mentioned you guys were playing some video poker. She plays some Pai Gow. What are you playing?
Yeah, you know, my gambling now has just become really recreational. And I love playing pitch blackjack in particular. I just find that the interaction with holding the cards and being able to squeeze them, it's just so much funner than a shoe deck, for instance.
Yeah.
And my video poker play has really ramped up in the last couple of years. I play much more of that than anything else. I still love playing craps, and I still love playing poker on occasion. My first Vegas trips were, you know, 16 hours a day of no limit poker for 8 days straight.
Holy smokes.
And that's all I did, right? And you get kind of sick of it over time, and you start gambling on other games for just the pure gambling aspect, right? The action, we'll say. So now when I go to town, I'll play, you know, low limit blackjack and a lot of video poker.
Okay, what are you? Do you have a video poker game of choice?
I like double bonus, and I don't really get into too many of the super times pays or anything like that. But when I do play in Main Street, I'll usually try to get my coin in per day playing jacks or better, like dollar jacks or better, which can go well or it can go terribly. And I always go in with a plan, and the plan is, okay, I'm going to play quarter jacks or better for a little while, and then maybe, you know, use the powers of parlay to increase my bets. And then 15 minutes later, I'm playing five play dollar double bonus or something like that, because I can't take playing jacks or better. It's just out of action.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I feel the same way. I mean, jacks or better is the game that I default to, but I often decide, you know, like, I know, like, bonus poker, the strategy isn't too different. Bonus double bonus gets a little like, I've been practicing with Bob Dancer's software, and I've quickly learned that the optimal strategy on that's much more different than I expected. And I'm always so afraid to deviate from my basic game, because I don't want to give up too much of, I don't want the percentage of, even if it's a better game by, like, you know, 0.5%, I'm always afraid I may be giving up, you know, 1.5% in my inability to play optimal strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, when you get into those high variance games, it's just a matter of hitting quads or not hitting quads. If you're not hitting quads, you're going to lose. If you are, you'll do fine, or you'll make some money doing it. So it's always a bit of a race to a quad. Put a couple $100 in and pound away on those buttons and hope you get a couple premium quads to make some money or carry you through.
Sure. Before we hit record, you mentioned that, or maybe yeah. just afterward, you mentioned that you're not really into the sports end, so I imagine you don't.
No, I'm not into sports betting. Actually, every time I go to Vegas, I'll place a bet on some sort of sporting event, and even though I take the sure shot, historically I've lost. although I would love to get down there when there's a UFC event and bet every underdog through the entire match, because I find, and you can correct me, but of any sport, that seems to have the biggest upsets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I guess I don't know the data on that enough to say yes or no. But, I think that when it comes to closer numbers, I think that the underdog has a stronger chance. But, that's a good question. So, do you get down on horses anymore? Do you go back to your roots of you and your grandfather?
No, never. He actually played the slots in that little Dresden facility quite a bit too. And my mom and me would often, run into him there. It's kind of funny, but he wasn't much of a gambler. He would do $5 or $10 in a machine at once. But all of a sudden you got half your family, playing at the slots together. It's a nice thing.
So, I mean, so you're up in Canada. I guess we've kind of buried the lead on that a little bit. You're up in Canada, and now that you've played in Canada and playing in the United States, tell me, what are some of the differences you see between the two entities, the two industries?
Sure. Well, like a lot of the states, there's no comped alcohol, and I'm going to give you a comparison, a really good comparison, as far as poker goes. So, in Canada, the poker dealers are wonderful people, very nice people, but they are unionized. So they typically make a decent hourly wage. And so tips don't account for much. So when you're playing with them, they don't have much motivation to keep the game going. So they get very few hands an hour. And also when you come to poker dealers, I think they switch off every 20 minutes or every 40 minutes. So every time they switch dealers, they, they count down the cards and they wash them and they wash them and they count them down and they shuffle them and they talk to the previous dealer and they just generally dick around, and they stop the action to count chips or make change, things like that. It's a very slow game. So when I come to Vegas, when the dealers rely on dealing as many hands per hour for tips, it's just amazing, because we're probably getting in triple the amount of hands in Vegas that you are in Ontario poker. That's a huge difference for me.
Okay. What about odds generally? Am I, there's difference between the US and the UK with odds, especially like in roulette and such, but, what are we finding in Canada?
So, I mean, if you look at roulette, it's all double zero roulette. I've never seen anything other than that. Blackjack is pretty fair. It's 3-2. The main difference here is it's stand on soft 17. I've yet to see, and somebody could correct me, but I've yet to see a blackjack game in Canada where it's hit soft 17. No surrender.
Oh, interesting.
Items like that. I think there's other small variations, but that's the big one.
Yeah.
Craps in local casinos around here, not very popular. They're typically reluctant to put a craps table in because of the labor with the three dealers it takes. And I'm trying to think if there's any other differences. Video poker, there's, as far as I can find, there's no playable video poker anywhere in Canada. It is garbage. So
that's unfortunate.
If you walk into our, there's no video poker bars. And there's really very few video poker machines on the floor, probably less than 5%.
What about blackjack? Are you still getting other favorable rules like split, double after split, surrender, stuff like that?
Yeah, typically not surrender though. No surrender. Not that I've ever
seen. No surrender.
Yeah.
That'll keep me. That'll push me away from a game. I know some people think it's kind of silly, but there's something about the opportunity to surrender that I really appreciate. That And I'm not so much of a stickler to where like I like sometimes I'll ask right away, but sometimes I won't think of it. I'll sit there and play, and I'll think of it while I'm playing. And then at the first opportunity to surrender, I ask, can I surrender? And if they say no, I'll be out of there pretty quickly.
I remember you.
Something
and I,
about that rule that I appreciate.
I remember you and I and some of the people playing at Ellis Island that 1/8, and they actually had surrender, and it's just something I'm not used to. So. It's never on your mind. You never think about it if you've never had the chance to surrender. So that was pretty good. I really enjoyed having that option.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about the players there that you find in Canada. And I guess poker is probably where you're most familiar. But if you can describe players at any other tables, feel free.
Yeah, it's funny. When I started going to the casino when I was younger and in college and going into college, there was a lot of people that loved the casino that were my age. And I'd get a group of friends and we'd all go there and I'd have comps and I could buy dinner for everybody. It was really great. And now I just don't see very many young people in casinos anymore around here. And I think how old am I? 35. So I started playing that 5-10 limit game when I was 19, 16 years ago. And if I were to go there this Saturday, I would be playing. It was like I jumped back in time 16 years. It's the same dudes. They're all still there. Some have died, you know. But probably eight of the 10 guys on my table are going to be the same guys I played with 16 years ago. So there's not a lot of life in casinos around here. Now, when you get to the big casinos, when you get to Windsor, or you get to Niagara especially, if you were to go to Niagara on a Saturday night, the Falls View, I'll make that clear, because there's two of them. You know, their limits are jacked. I've seen $50 minimums, and there's people stacked trying to play these games. So it's not a world for me.
Yeah. What do you normally see in minimums at the other casinos?
Like the smaller casinos are almost all $5, even a weekday, weekend nights, typically $5. You know, they'll have one or two $5 blackjack tables and then a couple $10 tables, but nothing too much more than that. They don't get a lot of action. And any casinos that are closer to the U.S. border, you know, if the worse our dollar is, the more action they get.
Because you have other U.S. Do you have other U.S. destinations that you go to for like as a gambling destination, or is it Vegas each time?
Actually, it's one of my, I'll call it a life list to visit every sort of major gambling destination in the States. So obviously I've been to Vegas a lot. I haven't been to Atlantic City. It's always been something I've been trying to get to. I want to do that road trip, jump in my car, drive the 9 hours. I think that'd be a lot of fun. My wife and I took a trip down to Tunica a few years ago, which was a blast. And I'd love to get down to Biloxi. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones. Those are sort of the major centers. Reno, I've always wanted to go to Reno, but there's really very little there anymore that I can tell. So,
you know, Biloxi and Tunica and Atlantic City, like they're all like their strips or their areas where like there's really close by. They don't have that here, but, like the Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania area it's got some nice casinos. It's just difficult. Like if you came down here, you'd be coming down here for one, maybe two properties. Otherwise there'd be so much like going in between other properties. But, I'm interested to see like how these states develop, as the years go on.
Yeah. It'd be nice if they could get a grouping of casinos together and then sort of make a visitor area where it's, you know, multi-use casinos, stadiums, arenas, restaurants, all in like an entertainment area, which draws more people in versus a casino that's just sort of on its own.
Yeah. Do you have friends that gamble or is that not a part of your local social life there?
You know, I really don't have friends that gamble. I've worked with a few people and had some friends over the course of time that enjoyed playing poker, but they never had the longevity that I did in the game. So being part of the Vegas groups is just been amazing, right? So I can fly down there on my own and meet up with the people, gamble, have a good time. It's been great.
Yeah, how long have you been doing these groups, these little group outings?
Yeah, I think I started maybe 2014 or 2015 with like a VIMP event. I went to one of those. Okay. And actually, I've been to three of those now, and I've just started going to the Vegas Vacations and probably some Oceans events and things like that, but probably for the last 3 or 4 years.
Maybe we'll see you at, maybe if we get another iteration of Gamble Palooza going in 2019, maybe we can get you down there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that I like road trips, so a 7 or 8 hour drive is not a big deal for me. If it lines up to a weekend and I can get down there, I'll be there.
Yeah. So obviously these groups, these outings are mostly known and popular because of this Vegas/gambling podcast community that we have. So what were some of those first podcasts that you were listening to that had you getting into these and attending these events?
Yeah, I remember I've always listened to 500 by Midnight, and that's always been a big one for me. And that's sort of the one that started me getting involved with these events with VIMF. And I remember, what was it, a Vegas Tripping podcast. And there was another one before that the name escapes me now. And then as I got into those ones, new podcasts sort of came about, like 360 Vegas and, of course, Vegas Confessions. I'd been listening to Gambling with an Edge for years, so just anything I could get my hands on. But, yeah.
Which and you don't have to give podcasts you don't have to name podcasts specifically as examples, but in general, which group of podcasts do you think is strongest right now? Gambling themed podcasts or Vegas themed podcasts?
That's a great question. I think that for me, I prefer Vegas podcasts.
Sure.
But when you have multiple Vegas podcasts and they all sort of report on the same news, you also seek purely gaming podcasts as well. But for me, I prefer the Vegas podcasts.
Sure.
Yeah.
You mentioned road tripping. 500 by Midnight is like my favorite road podcast. I don't know why, but I enjoy like all the podcasts in a space. For some reason, I enjoy listening to 500 on like when I'm on the road more than any other ones.
Yeah.
Just such an easy listen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have loyalty to any certain properties or programs?
I do. Yeah. I really got into the Boyd casinos, which I know I've taken kind of a punch in the stomach from as of late. But I really got into them. I love playing at Main Street Station, especially. I do the majority of my coin in there. And I play there mainly because it's just comfortable to me. I love playing there. I like the atmosphere. I like the people. It's just I'm willing to give up a few little things here and there to be able to play somewhere that I love playing.
What do you like out of a property? You know, like what are some of the things that you require out of any property that you stay at? What are the things that really draw you to any certain spot?
Luckily for me, extremely little. I never use the pool. I couldn't care less what my room looks like. As long as there's not bed bugs, then I'm pretty happy. I do like a quiet room, and really, I'm there. I want good beer, especially because I love craft beer. So as long as I have access to really good beer and decent pay tables, I'm really, really happy.
How? So I remember when I was at Gamble Palooza, I was at Foxwoods, and at one of the bars, they had video poker, and they also had this really, really nice double IPA behind the bar. So, and my first night there, I sit down, I play video poker, and I get this double IPA, and it was really good. The next day, the group is in town, we're playing craps, and I asked the cocktail waitress, "Hey, can I get the double IPA from that bar over there?" And she's like, "Only if you have a premium player's card." And I remember thinking, I was like, "I'm probably going to lose more money at this table than I will at the video poker bar, but yet I still can't get it simply because I'm not at the video poker." And it was so frustrating. I'm curious. Have you found it difficult at all to find good comped craft beer while playing in Vegas?
Lately, yes. I remember about 2 years ago, craft beer, of course, has been exploding, and I found that I found video poker bars had a better selection of taps, and they were bringing in one-offs and things like that, especially when you had like Tag Bar, for instance, at the Link, which was just incredible. But I find things are drying up a little bit. Taps are reducing, like the number of taps are reducing. They're bringing in larger corp beers, larger macro beers and things like that. But actually, I think overall, craft beer is probably what led me out of the poker, you know, the strip poker, and to video poker bars, because I used to play a lot of Hold'em for hours and hours, and that was my whole trip, sitting on those tables all day, every day, eating as fast as I could to get back on the tables. And then I got kind of tired of doing that and the swings that the bankroll swings that came with it. So I remember, you know, spending a day downtown and just, you know, just being a complete low rolling degenerate all day. And I think my first day doing it, I lost like $80, but I'd gambled for 12 hours and I was drunk and I had a great time. And so, then the next day I went back to the poker tables on the strip and I played, and then come the next day, I'm like, yeah, I want to go back downtown and just keep playing like that and playing cheap blackjack and playing video poker and drinking and not really caring how much I won or lost or whatever. And so eventually, as trips went on, I just migrated from the poker tables to the video poker bars, where I could, one of the best things about video poker bars is that you never have to wonder what they have, because everything is right in front of you. So you can ask the bartender, you can establish a relationship with him or her and say, you know, will you comp that bourbon or that bourbon or that bourbon? It's all right there in front of you. You don't have to worry. So the drink selection is great. And that's also when my hangovers just, you know, escalated greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, we only got a few more minutes here. We're gonna play a little game. You're familiar with it. It's called Bet Your Life on It. I think that's what it's called. It's some variation of Bet Your Life on It. The scenario that I have for you today, in 5 to 10 years, we learned that a new location has surpassed Vegas and Atlantic City as the gambling destination of the United States. Is it Colorado, as they capitalize on a recreational drug industry, I guess, and build a gaming industry around it, allowing people to not only come and hit the slopes, but also hit the tables and get high while doing it? Or is it Florida, that banks on the huge swarm of retirees that are going down there? They build up around the already vacation friendly spots and build up a Vegas style strip, whether in Orlando or Miami, something like that, and become the gambling destination of the United States. Which of the two, as a Canadian, which of those two do you think would win in that scenario, or would be the case?
I'm gonna give two opinions. The first opinion is that I think logically probably Florida would be the obvious choice, because there's a lot more attractions there, Disney World and such. So I think access to Florida is a bit easier for people from Canada. But so my official guess is Florida. But to be selfish, I would choose Colorado, because it's beautiful there. And if I said to my wife, hey, honey, I'm going to go to Colorado, she's probably not going to bother coming. Whereas if I say, honey, I'm going to go to Florida, I have to spend 3 days in Disney World.
Fair enough. Chris McGowan, aka Gambling Magoo on Twitter. Sir, thank you so much for following up on the drunken invite that I gave you at Vegas Vacation 7. It was a pleasure talking to you. It was nice to learn about you as a gambler, and I'm sure sometime down the road we'll get you back on and continue this conversation.
Thanks so much, Tim. It was so great meeting you at 360 Vegas Vacation, and I hope to see you again. Thanks for having me on.
Again, big thanks to Gambling Magoo, Chris McGowan, for joining me. Probably going to have him on again maybe later down the line to get a little deeper into some things I want to talk about, probably maybe even preceding a Vegas trip, because we know that he's well known for for these schedules that he has that he like really adheres to make the most out of his time. I want to get a little bit more into that a little bit. But when him and I were recording, it was during a back-to-back-to-back that I had a recording, so we were under it. So like we were under a time crunch on finishing up. So we're probably gonna get him back on to expand on that a little bit and get a little deeper in some of the topics that we just didn't have time for this time around. Over the past couple months, I've gotten increasing amounts of people pinging me saying, hey, if you ever like go to Horseshoe or Maryland Live, or you know, if you want to meet up at MGM National Harbor, I may be available for that. And our good friend Eric Rosenthal has also shown interest in maybe coming down this way and doing and playing a little bit. So if you are at all interested, if you're in this area, if you're in the greater DC, greater Maryland area, or within a couple hour drive and you would come into the area for this type of thing, if you would be down to hang, just sort of hang out at a casino for the better part of an evening, whether it be craps or sitting at the bar playing some video poker or whatever it may be, hit me up on Twitter, tweet at me, throw Eric in there, Eric Rosenthal. I think it's at E Rosenthal. I should have it, but I don't have it. You know, if you know who Eric Rosenthal is, you know his Twitter handle. Tag him. Let us know. And if there's a big enough interest, if there's enough people to say, hey, yeah, in general, I'd be down for that. We might try to get something together for like a Saturday evening or something like that. Don't know if we'd be able to get be able to reserve a table or anything. I don't really have the plug in on those. I'm not that connected at these local casinos, but we could definitely hang out and get some play and just you know sort of socialize and sort of establish our little community here in the Mid-Atlantic. So I'm at The Better Life on Twitter, and now I feel bad that I just sort of I just skimmed over. Eric's like, whatever. His doesn't matter. At E Rosenthal 1029. See, I would have gotten that number wrong. I would not have remembered that, but probably he's at E Rosenthal 1029. Let us know if you are interested in a little bit of gaming here in the Maryland area. TheBetterLife.us is my barren website, and I every day I remind myself, hey, I should probably actually do something at the website, and then you know life happens and 5 weeks goes by and I forget to do something. But what there is there is a merchandise shop at thebetterlife.us/merch. We got a crap shirt, got a sports analytics shirt, got a Better Life shirt. Use promo code YO11 to save 11% off on your purchase. Get you some cool gear to wear at the casino, wherever it may be, and it supports the show, supports this endeavor, and I do greatly appreciate it. Another way you can support is through Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. I throw bonus content up there as I can. I often try to find ways to get my Patreon, get my patrons in on some like free rolling or an opportunity to be involved in something. Like recently, we tried to get a little ScoreX league going, a little app that sort of treats the NFL like a Wall Street market. I'm not crazy about it, but I'm curious to see what other people think about it. But patreon.com/thebetterlife. It's a way you can get more a part of this community and be involved a little bit more personally in the show and support it. You know, we tell you to tip your dealers, tip your cocktail waitresses, but also tip your favorite podcast host should you be so inclined. I think it's going to wrap up episode 31. Can't believe it. 31 episodes. It feels like it just started, and comparatively to other people in this community, and podcasting in general, this podcast definitely still isn't in its infancy, but hard to believe been around for the better part of a few months away from a year, I think. And it's been really exciting. I appreciate all the positive feedback. I appreciate all of any corrections that are made, any encouragement. And if you have a guest recommendation, if you learn about a gambler that you think you want to learn more about them, just hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life. Let me know who they are. And you know, you can even I have messages open. You can DM me, and I will see that. It may take a couple days because I see the DM request, but I will get to that. So if you want to just DM me, let me know. But always open to guest recommendations. I think that's it. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night. And good luck.